Hey, Sinister Seekers, welcome to another episode of Studio Sinister. I'm your host, Farah, and alongside me is my best friend and partner in all things eerie.
I'm Courtney.
And we are your guides through the twisted paths of the strange, the unexplained, and the downright sinister. Girl, tell everybody, when we were talking earlier before we started about the recent episode we did and that knocking.
Yeah, so you guys probably heard, I don't think you cut it out of the episode, obviously.
No, didn't.
There was like knocking on my door here behind us, and we both worked out. It's weird. It was probably my dog, and we just rolled with it. When we were done, I obviously left my little office space and found that my dog was like, not kenneled, but my husband had him like gated off in a completely different part of the house. So I don't know what that was. We don't have AC in this house. I don't know. I don't know what it was, but I just wanted to update y'all because we were all spooked, I would say.
So, it's crazy, especially when we are recording. But like I said, and you agree, I think we've come to that conclusion that there is something that goes between our homes, haunts your house, haunts my house, and it definitely likes when we're together because it loves to be, what's the word? It loves to be noticed. It loves to be talked about. I think it likes to be
in the spotlight. I don't know what it is. I'm sure there's multiple things, but I do think it likes the idea that you and I keep talking about it in a public space. So I don't know if that's something we should continue. I'm open to it, but
we have a great episode for you this evening, Sinister Seekers. Let's get right into it. Meet David Omen, the ghostly guru and storyteller extraordinaire whose life took a spooky turn when he decided to set up shop right next to the infamous Manson murder scene. With a flair for the paranormal, David's been mixing it up with spirits like it's happy hour at the afterlife's coolest lounge. So he rolls up his sleeves, teams up with his father, and together they built the Omen House. Think less haunted mansion, more like a supernatural social club. It's not long before David's throwing ghost parties and rubbing elbows with the otherworldly elite, inspiring him to write House at the end of the drive, because who wouldn't want to Netflix and chill with a few friendly phantoms? His house becomes the talk of the ghost town, starring in its own reality show, cameos, and making headlines faster than you can say boo. From Larry King Live to TMZ, everyone's dying to get a peek inside. The Omen House is so off the charts haunted that even the pros call it the Disneyland for the dead. And why not? It's got more spirits than a liquor cabinet. And David's recorded enough paranormal evidence to fill a ghostly library. But here's the kicker. David's not just about ghostly gripes and eerie encounters. He's a regular dude who just digs the dead, sure. But he also is all about living life to the fullest. His motto, fear the living, party with the dead. He's convinced that ghosts are just old friends dropping by to say hi. And he's all about rolling out the red carpet for them. So if you ever find yourself at the Omen House, remember, it's not about the spooks. It's about the stories, the laughs, and the once in a lifetime chance to mingle with history's most happening haunt. Just another day in the life of David Omen, the ghost host with the most. So, David, hello, my friend. How are you? And thank you for being here.
Well, first of all, Farah and Courtney, that whoever wrote that, I really, my hat's off to you, because that was the most, that was incredible. I have to say, I was laughing, but thinking, yeah, but it's very true. It's interestingly put. It was just so spot on. I want to thank you because I want to get a copy of that because you think I'm kidding. I'm serious. It's like, can I have it? Here's my entry. Here's my bio. Read this. It's done. It was so.
Every guest needs to have a wonderful intro. Courtney knows that because when we used to do the Paranormal Project together, I would always intro her and my two other friends, give them a great intro, even though by the sixth Paranormal Project, everybody knew them. But you deserve it, David, because you are a force to be reckoned with in the paranormal world. And for anyone that doesn't know you, I wanted to give something short, sweet, to the point. But yeah, but thank you. I do appreciate it.
No, that was wonderful. I really enjoyed listening to that too. Yeah, it's not even quite put like that. But yeah, that's short and right to the point, direct. It's beautiful. That's what it is. Is that from now on? Say, you want to, here's my answer. There you go.
But that could be like, inside of your, like the inside of your book sleeve, where every time you publish a book, that's what it says.
I got news to you. I will add that because I have to be format the book. My actual, this is the book I wrote. Goes to sale. I've got 3 copies left. Then I'm going to do the reprint. But oh, I'm definitely going to add that to the pit to the book. That's an incredible intro. I love that. I thought it was like, well,
thank you. Oh, that makes my day. Thank you very much.
Because I'm a guy that lives in a paranormal house, an environment that's active and haunted. But for all intents and purposes, where before I lived here, I used to go ghost hunting and looking for haunted houses as a kid. After living with it for 22 years, and it's still, obviously, I still go to my friends' homes and I still feel the presence of the spirits there, but I'm not so much like interested in running out and going looking for another haunted house to explore, because I found that every place is haunted. And that's what people don't quite understand. It's not like, oh, the Queen Mary. And I go, first of all, in a place, these places that are active, open, operating hotels. You got a real problem with me in the fact that you're trying to go investigating a place where the environment is completely overrun with people. I don't care. Oh, I'm in this room. Yeah, there's a room above you. There's a room next to you. There's a room right there. There's a room below you. There are pipes that are going through. And the Queen Mary got these large, vacuous spaces inside the walls that you can't see behind phones that are interconnected because of wires and pipes. And I say, yeah, it's great. But if there's somebody on the third floor, third deck, and you're in the sixth deck, don't think that they couldn't be doing something up there that you're hearing the sound travel down. Because in my own home, for instance, we had an event here and some people on the third floor, they were investigating. And we thought everybody was on the bottom floor with us. Heard a bang sound coming from the closet. So I went upstairs and I watched the cameras. And sure enough, somebody was upstairs getting something to drink at the bar. And they put the glass down. And as it turns out, at the same time code where he puts the glass down, the same time code we hear the bang, bang, 3 floors below. You go, how's that possible? So we did a test. I went and I told him, I got a cool idea. I said, you guys stay here. I said, stay in this room. I said, I'm going to go to the top floor and test something. So I saw where he was sitting, where he was standing, and put the glass on the counter. I went bang, right on the same exact spot. I went on the intercom. I said, did you guys hear the bang? They said, yeah. I said, it's not a ghost, but we heard that the first bang was the fact that he put his glass right on one of the beams that goes straight down from the first floor through the second floor. It's all the way continuous going down to the third floor into that gosh darn, into that just hell as it sounds. You could hear 40 feet below.
That's what I love about you, David, is that you will say when something is a ghostly phenomena or when it's not. That's what I love about your place, is that you have a DVR system throughout, but you don't need to make up paranormal happenings. There's something always going on in your home, but you're not exploiting it. It's research. It's letting people experience that might not know much about the paranormal, that might be skeptics. But I also just love the way that you respect the spirits, because not many people do that.
Yeah.
A lot of people are very exploitative of spirits. I think that we've all probably seen that, unfortunately, just in our years doing this. But I think Farrah and I both, I'm probably a little bit more skeptical than you are when it comes to the paranormal, but we both believe in it to a certain degree. And I just think it's really cool when you have somebody that's able to study it in a controlled environment, but also at the same time, like, full disclosure, I was able to debunk this, because that unfortunately does not happen every day. So I think we can both really appreciate it.
And especially being that you just brought that up about debunking, I like the part where the figurines that are on your TV stand, you're always watching them to show everyone out there that, hey, this isn't a fluke. This is someone that's doing it as like a little communication to me, to let me know that they're here. So I just love that. But let me start off with this question, David. So can you share a personal hobby or interest that most people might not associate with you? Because I want people also to know you, not just you in the Omen House, even though we will talk about it a lot, but I want to get more known about you.
I love to entertain and have people come over. This past weekend, on Saturday night, I had some 6 social media influencers come over. And I guess I had a big learning lesson this weekend about social media influencers. I didn't realize that some social media influencers are also serious social activists. And as a result of assuming that it's just for shits and giggles, these people were pretty much the people who go out and videotape and, I don't want to say prosecute, but they put the flame to the rear ends of the people of the Church of Science. And when they said this, I was going, so why the hell are you guys here at my house dealing with the paranormal and this and that? He goes, oh, we're taking a
breath. I'm thinking,
oh, dear God, there must be some major science groups of them. They're the organization of that, the security arm of them. Is probably watching him and then saying,
Oh my God.
Put Taylor on the target. And I'm serious. And then he keeps on mentioning Scientology and this and that. This is what I think of it. You mean Tom Cruise? And
Oh, yes.
And I said, Leo, really? I said, that's shit. I said, so what do I look like? I'm not a fan of that. It's like, neither was I a fan of S. Well, these kids are 25 years old. So they, what's that? I try to enlighten them. I said, go look it up online. I said, I'm sure there's crap about those two things that are started at the same time from the 50s.
Over half of them don't even know what they're fighting for. That's the funny thing. They don't know. It's just what the trend is. It's just to get likes. That's it. I have said that from day one. But David, when you first built that house, and I remember when Courtney covered this part in our episode that we covered on the Omen House, there was a lot of workers that were experiencing things when the home was getting built. So let us know a little bit about that. How was that? And at the time, were you into the paranormal? Were you automatically believe them? Or you were like, oh my God, what did I just get myself into?
All right, let me start with the last part of the question to answer that first and work backward. I've always been intrigued by the paranormal since I was a kid. I used to be interested in, the Loch Ness Monster, Bigfoot, the idea about ancient aliens and stuff. And I don't want to say I reined some of those things in, but as I got older and I got a little wiser, I started doing the research because everything has got to be, in my case, in my thoughts, has got to be based on fact. Not on philosophy, not on mythology, not on people's biases, religiosity, etc. So I started looking into the Loch Ness Monster stuff. And as I started to do the research, I started to realize that the gosh darn actual Loch Ness system in there in Scotland is only 10,000 years old.
Yeah, it's not very old at all.
And when I heard that, I'm a history buff. And I've always been fascinated by paleontology and archaeology, et cetera, et cetera. And dinosaurs was, as a kid, my first, as most kids are, their first favorite topic. And I never let it go. I still was fascinated by dinosaurs as an adult. But when I started to realize that, and the theory then how it could have been had it been a couple million year old lake system that basically got cut off from the ocean, then it would have made sense. But a 10,000-year-old structure that's that didn't add up. So I started to realize you got to check that one off my list of the plesiosaur possibly being in there. Bigfoot is, I believe that there is such a thing, except we're going to have a whole hard time finding it because it's smart enough to know how to avoid us because it is some lineage of what they call bipedal. What's the word I'm looking for? Not Homo sapien. It's part of the line of apes. Mm-hmm. Now, where it is, if it's an Australopithecus, Gigantopithecus.
Gigantopithecus, yes.
It's another story. Pithecus is another divergent breed. But the only reason why they say Gigantopithecus is because of the enormity in size. That's then. What if it is, in fact, a more recent offshoot, maybe only a 14,000 or 25,000-year-old species that's still there and it's smart enough as a hominid, but it's avoiding humans at all goddamn costs.
I don't blame it.
Because he's seeing what we've done to deer and so that his environment shrinking all around him and forcing him into the deeper, denser parts of the woods. Whether or not people smart enough to catch a picture of him is another story. Experience I've always believed in, and I had my own experience when I was 21 that said, yeah, all right, that's it. We're not going to get into the details. There was enough to leave me saying, yeah, if that didn't happen, I wouldn't be here today. And I physically know somebody was something or some entity or some energy basically interfered with my demise on this earth to leave. And it was like, okay, oh, I got it. You got my attention. You confirmed. And even before that, I had experiences where I heard something in my head, either call it intuition or sixth sense, say, don't take her home. Let your friend Glenn take her home. Example, when I was 16, my girlfriend at the time wanted me to take her home. I was at my parents' house up in the hills. My friend Glenn lived right next door to her. And I said, look, let Glenn take you home. I tried to push her off. She was relentless. So I ended up acquiescing and driving her home. On the drive home, after I dropped her off, I had a little miscarriage of thought. I was looking down. I was distracted. I heard a buzzing sound coming from what I thought my radio. I looked down, and the car had a natural pull to the right. So as I looked down, it started to drift, and it drifted into a gosh darn lamppost. And I basically crashed the car, which I just spent like $1,500 having it repaired and all fixed.
I should have listened to you, whoever that was.
But boy, at the time, I was like, that goddamn son. I should have, and again, I should have listened to the voice and said, whatever you don't disavow this voice. He's telling you if you're all good. So at a certain point, when I think it was 21, it was the last one, I had a big party at my parents' house. The voice said to me, let's just say I was doing risky business. I was like, risky business. My parents would go to town to their friend's beach house, and then we'd be at the house by myself. And it's my 21st birthday. Let's say. There was like 300 people there. But at 8 o'clock, when the party was just getting going, I saw this neighbor kid come in that I had known for all my life. And I heard the voice say, clear as a bell, something bad is going to happen to you. He's going to be directly involved.
That's chilling.
And chilling is not that. This chilling is what the play out of the scene was. Fast forward, one in the morning or something, maybe 1:30, I see him outside on the patio near the swimming pool with a crystal dessert goblet that was like this shaped, went down, and then it was the base. And he's holding it with a crown around, his fingers around the crown, his other three fingers around the stem, and the base is here. So I ran outside and said, that's my mother's. Can't anything happen to that? So I said, Danny, I put my right hand on his right hand, which is on the glass. I put my left hand here, right below the glass. So if he does this, because that's, I dropped it, I'm going to snatch it before it's the ground.
God.
Danny looks at, Dad, we're not. That's just where my hand is positioned. So he's looking at me and I'm looking at him. I said, Danny, give me the glass. Just as straightforward and as firm as that. I said the second time, I said, Danny, give me the glass. I'm looking in his eyes, and all of a sudden, I kid you not, I see like flames in his eyes right in the pupil's form. And I'm like, whoa. And at that instance, he does this and pushes on both sides of the crown of the goblet, the crystal-like goblet, and it does the impossible. It breaks.
Oh, no.
Three big pieces. One, my hand is, here's the goblet, goes right through my hand. Do you guys see this? Can you see that?
Oh, my gosh.
Where's there? Oh, my gosh. I see it right there. Yep.
Wow. Who do you think this voice is, David? Do you think this is
a crazy angel who I figured out? And said, so I went like this, and I kept my hand. And we had my friend brought his 8-piece band there that was there, and they were like ska, reggae, rock. And the guy said, are you okay? And I said, I don't know. And I went like this. And blood just rocked. And then I said, shit, I guess I'm not okay. I said, no, I didn't feel it. It's not like I was like, oh. I was like, I didn't feel it. When I saw it, my reaction was, oh, shit, but I still didn't feel it.
You're in shock.
So it was in shock. But the fact is that it was such a sharp, quick cut. And it went right through the nerves of the fucking hand. This is all numb still. Some many years later,
wow.
I said to them, I said, guys, I said, somebody go in my bedroom. Firstly, the other two guys in the band grabbed him and throw his ass out of the house.
Good.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. And I said,
I needed you about 15 minutes before
this happened. So I said, somebody go in my bedroom, go in my dresser drawer. In the middle drawer, get a long athletic sock. I said, the other guy said, go grab the goddamn broom on the side of the house. And break it in two and give me a freaking piece about yay long, about a foot or so long. And I'm like this, and I can just feel this like in my, because I can feel the blood pumping. And I'm like,
the pulse, yep.
I'm going to die. I'm going to fucking die. So I'm trying to stay calm and cool and squatted because I can freak out myself, but I got to keep the rest of these assholes in tow. So I said to the guy, they came out and asked me, he puts a tourniquet and we go rushing down in his 1970 Beetle. And it's got
a tail
light. So we're driving down Veteran Boulevard from Sunset Boulevard from my parents' house up in the hills. And we're beeline. It's UCLA emergency. All of a sudden, the motorcycle cop, it's ding, ding, in the morning, comes, pulls us over. And I said, on my hand, is now like this. And the guy's turned white. I thought, exactly. Blood stained red and dripping. So I'm like this. I'm like going like this. And the cop looks. He goes, what are you doing? I said, officer. I said, this is named at the time of the place. I said, we have a medical emergency here. I said, I've got a laceration to my left hand. And I'm bleeding. I don't want to bleed. He goes, let me give you a touch. I said, that's why we're right now. He goes, don't say another word. He goes, let me give you an official escort to the UCLA emergency.
Wow, thank goodness.
Gets us in there. The doctor sees me, luckily, and he goes, he's like, this to my hand. It's like this, and this is just wide open. It's just not bleeding now, but it's there because I got the tourniquet still on. They tied it off. And he's looking like this with a goddamn freaking metal scalpel like this. And I'm not feeling a goddamn thing. And I'm as apt as you can be. I'm like thinking, this reminds me of Westworld. They're working on the guy's arm, but it's a totally bionic arm. And I'm like, he goes, son of a bitch. So this is my 21st birthday right now. He goes, I got news to you. He says, you just got the biggest birthday gift of all. I said, what's that? He goes, you are about a millimeter away from severing the tendon that connects the thumb to this. He goes, if that's severed, because your thumb is basically, that's the rest of your life. Your thumb is no use. You're as bad as a dog. You can't grab. He goes, that's your luck. I said, what about you? He goes, also, he goes, you don't feel anything. I said, no. He goes, because it cut the nerves so quickly, like a freaking guillotine blade. He goes, that blade must have been so sharp. And I said, it was from a crystal god. He goes, you're lucky again. Because it was a clean glass when it broke internally. There was nothing there. And it went right through. He goes, it was like a razor blade cutting. He goes, yeah. He goes, I don't feel anything. He goes, yeah, you also won't have any nerves. You won't feel anything. It'll be numb for the rest of your life because it severed the nerves. That's
okay. So I'm assuming that you had gotten stitches that night.
Then you got it. That's the 17 stitches, right?
17. Wow. I was just going to ask, how many did you get?
And it actually went through onto this side. He goes, you are so lucky. He was just, I said, look, I'm supposed to go to Vegas in a couple of hours. It's my birthday. He goes, have fun. And he wrapped me up, put the stitches, and I was in a gosh darn sling for the next 3 weeks.
Did you still go to Vegas, though?
Yeah.
Hell yeah. That's not going to stop you.
You're 21 years old. It's your birthday. You live once. You have your 21st birthday once. Your friends booked a room at Caesars as mini suites. Yeah, I had no choice. I was going. He goes, won't feel anything. He goes, we'll give you the pain meds, but it'll be an afterthought because the nerves are, because they might have some tenderness, but he goes, otherwise you're fine. You're good to go. We left at like 2 in the morning to leave.
You were lucky from that guardian angel. So then when you...
See the point, I didn't listen again. I didn't listen, but I'm thinking, I didn't invite him. He's just crashed in the freaking party. Had I kicked him out and somebody kept a watch on him coming in and not him not jumping over the fence, this probably wouldn't have happened. By the way, do you see that black shadow zipping across in front of me every now and then?
I saw something a little bit ago, but I didn't know if it was because, again, we're just starting to use Restream, so I didn't know if it was something in my program.
No, it's not in your program. It's here at the house.
I was wanting this to happen. I'm not going to lie.
That's a spirit. They'd love to drop bomb in my gosh darn podcast time.
Spirits. Hello, spirit. Hello. We're making sure they know it. My name's Farah. This is Courtney.
What's up? Wild. I'm sorry. That's so cool.
So when you built that house then, David, and those workers were like, hey, our tools are being messed around. Did you have that little guardian say, okay, someone's here. This is real. Or was it just something that you were like, all right, hey, I'm dealing with it. And just you were happy to move in and you were all about it.
I hate to say it, but I knew when we bought the property, from the first second we drove up here, when I drove up here before my dad, 26 years ago, you're right, it was November 26 years ago, when I first got that call at 8 in the morning on that Sunday morning to come up and take a look at this lot, that, let's just say, when I got up here, it's like, oh my God, that's where the tape, and it's just like familiar ground. It was like an old stomping ground. So to me, it was like when we buried my cat, it was November, December, 3 months later, when my cat Arthur died, we buried him on the side of the hill. It was then that I knew that we had, I physically, mentally, emotionally knew that there was, they were here. Mm-hmm. Not, again, my assumption then that it was directly connected only to the Sharon Tate victims, I knew that somebody was there. At first, when we buried Arthur on the side of the hill in January or February of 99, I said to my friends, and I feel like we've got a whole bunch of pallbearers, a group of people,
like an escort.
People around us, right, as we're burying him. I said, I don't feel like we're alone. He said, I didn't want to say something, but to the effect that I also feel the sensation that we are quite literally surrounded by a bunch of spirits. I too feel that. And it was comforting. It was just like, we're here as mourners to be with you and support you while you're burying him. Because I said to them, I said, I'm putting my cat Arthur here in the earth here, because this is forevermore going to be my property. I'm not selling this. I'm not spending the rest of my time building this house with my mom and my dad and then going to give it up, because it had always been my dream to build a house my father had designed and that I had worked on myself. So it was like I'd say marking the territory or marking the property. But in so many words, I was letting them know I'm in for the long haul. I'm here. I'm not going
to. I love that.
And that's
how I
feel. And I think that might have been the point where the spirits knew that I really was a man of my word and going to do what I said. And like a lot of people who buy a house, build a house, and sell it, I'm going to do this. And it's like all about going up. And I'm like, go where? Why? I spent almost four years of my life building this house. I don't really feel compelled to do otherwise. I don't want somebody else to live in here until I leave this earth, so to speak.
And what was the reason that you decided to open your house up to investigations? Was it just because you knew that there were a lot of skeptics out there and you wanted to try to change their mind? Because you are living that. You are living in a haunted house. It is happening. You're not crazy. So what was the deciding factor to do that?
Honestly, you're going to find this very interesting and amusing, but up until, now I've been here for probably 22 years in August, up until the time that we did the Ghost Adventures show, which aired 10 years ago this month, I did believe it's this month, last month, I didn't have any of those things. I had brought in investigators and different psychics that I was friends with and that I knew and that reached out to me to bring them in here. But I think it was after we did Ghost Adventures that we did, and I started a few of those tours, because I felt that, oh, that's right. Thanks. He said the misrepresentation of myself and the spirits here on that show was just so utterly infuriating, exasperating, irritating.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say painfully bothersome, but it was a real bug in my ass to put a blunt. I didn't like it.
I could tell.
I was, the fact that we told him information that the house is built where Lisa Williams had said some 6 years earlier, eight years earlier, that a Native American on horseback had died falling down the slope of the side of the hill and broke his neck and the horse's neck, and both their bodies were, and the remains were left on the side of the hill and covered through mudslides, turned it into a Native ceremonial burial ground.
Yeah. I was going to ask, do you think, just because, full disclosure, guys, I have not the highest opinion of Zach Bagans. Do you think that he blew things out of proportion the way that I feel? That was how I interpreted it. But I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on that.
I can tell you, factually speaking, he embellishes a lot.
Yeah. Okay. I kind of figured, but...
And not only my home, but other people who I've spoken to, Bloody Mary at the prison. She's New Orleans. I forgot what she has, the Bloody Mary tours.
And she has that apartment upstairs where the guy killed his girlfriend and then he jumped to his death. Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then I think it's Keith Linderman up in Seattle also told me that when they were there for his show, to do their episode at his house, nothing happened. And then Zach decried the house wasn't haunted. And he said, it's funny because after they left, we had some other people investigate the house. And all the cabin doors and the kitchen were open and closely on their own. And I'm going, man, I said, you guys have it really bad. I said, that's poltergeist activity.
Yeah.
I say, in my house, stuff happens, but it's not dramatic. It's not over the top. It's not a real intense cluster of activity, of motion and stuff. It's like the figurine gets thrown over. And because of poltergeist, and they go, no, that's not a poltergeist. A poltergeist is the most abused, overused word in the community because, for the most part, it is a rare occurrence of a poltergeist. Poltergeist, not what Zach Bagans says when a brick flies across the room because that's a poltergeist. I'm going, no, that is not a poltergeist. That is such an insignificant, isolated little incident.
Right. And a lot of times, poltergeist can be created by yourself because you emanate your own energy into a place. So if even if it's a little bit of activity, depending on who you are and how strong your belief is or your aura, I've heard that it can accentuate the activity a little bit.
I've heard that. And Dr. Barry Taff, who was here a number of years ago.
I was just going to ask you about him, David. That's so weird because we must be on the same level.
What's repeating is what I've heard from Barry. And I don't exactly agree with Barry on a lot of things. And that's one of the things he said, that if you brought a person that was epileptic into the house, they'd have a problem. And I keep going, that's an assumption that you can't at all validate or verify or even tell me about. Because not everybody that has something that has seizures comes to the house. Not everybody's going to tell you that they are seizure prone. So if somebody doesn't tell you they are seizure prone and they come into the house and nothing happens, you wouldn't know it. And you wouldn't have any proof to verify it.
Right.
The problem is he mentioned that. And some people, such as Jack Osborne, who's got his own, heard that and refused to come to the house because what Barry's assumption was. And it's a Barry. That's great, but you can't prove it. You can't. Right. The idea that we had people here, especially we had Bridget Marquardt from The Girls Next Door. They also brought over who Barry sent as a poltergeist agent. The other one, Kendra Wilkinson. And when Kendra was here visiting a few years ago, I'm thinking, according to Barry, there's supposed to be a bunch of stuff that's going to happen when she's here. Nothing could be further from the truth. It was as docile and as placid as a calm lake.
Now, Barry had said that when you approach your spiral staircase from the kitchen living area, that there is a very high milligauss that's recorded there, as well as down by the dirt mound in your basement. Is he embellishing that, or is right about your house?
No, that's correct. We have the interesting that theory of the people. He says it's a theoretical theory that the energies may trigger this. And I haven't seen it yet. We've had enough people that I'd have to suspect that one of them has a history of having seizures. And I've had people in here that had neurological disorders and they didn't have any problems. And also Barry also suspected that my cats and dogs would live half lifespans because of the EMF levels. And I said, but Barry, if the energies are shifting through the house, you have to be in one spot that's got that energy for long enough, sitting there basically like standing in front of or next to an X-ray machine. Not like that. The energies are constantly shifting. So what Barry was saying, as far as the DC EMF levels, they are off the charts. At the front door, he registered 2,000 milligauss positive. At the top of the stairs, it went from 2,000 milligauss positive to the bottom of the stairs was 2,000 milligauss negative.
And he, was sick a lot after the experiences there, or no?
He says that he claims that had to go to the hospital, and the only problem is that as I said, Barry said, if it was so bad, I said, why'd you keep coming back? He goes, I was doing research and stuff. And said, Barry, this is problematic, I said to him. When you say things like that, he goes, what's affecting me? I said, we know it's affecting you, Barry. I know that because I wrote about it in my goddamn book. And I memorialized it in the scene in my movie where he basically told me, he says, after the first time he visited here, he calls me up like a week later. He goes, I got to tell you, I'm having some weird, violent sexual nightmares.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, I said, Barry, what is a weird, violent, sexual night? He goes, let me tell you, this is it. I'm in this dream. I'm on myself on my bed, and there are three girls that are topless or naked that are massaging and caressing me. I said, what's wrong with that? He goes, shut up and listen. It's like, all right. He goes, all of a sudden, they start dripping candle wax on my stomach. He goes, then they start really massaging it. It's getting really tender. And all of a sudden, He says, I start feeling sharp pains from my abdomen. And he says, in the dream, I look up, raise my head, I look up, I look down, and they've got their hands inside. See that flashlight by?
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. I saw that. Yeah. Not obvious. Sometimes I'm looking at the camera, not looking at the picture that we're shooting.
Just happened again.
Yep.
You guys.
We love you guys, though. So thank you for taking care of David so well in that house. Well, Barry, that's weird that you say that.
So Barry looks up and he goes, I wake up. And he goes, I actually grab my stomach and it feels tender. And I said, okay. Well, I get up and I go into the kitchen. I said, yeah. He goes, I go make myself some warm milk. And I just sip it. And I just take 5 minutes to get in my head. I go back in the bedroom. I go back to sleep. I said, yeah. He goes, yeah, my ass, because it picks up. He says, as soon as I go into sleep mode, it picks up right where it stopped.
And I'm like, what the fuck?
He goes, uh-huh. And then I wake up again. So I go back in the kitchen, and I spend a half hour reading the newspaper to just having a cup of tea, just trying to totally clean my skull of it. Thanks, guys. I saw that. I go back to bed. What do you think happens? I said, what? He goes, it picks up from where it just...
It picks up again.
Wow. And he goes, I said, how long? He goes, I said, oh my God, Barry, I'm so sick. He goes, I'm not done. I said, you're not done? He goes, no. I said, what? He goes, it's been happening for the past 4 nights in a row. The same exact dream.
Have you ever had that, David?
Nope.
Yeah, I wanted to ask if you've ever had any sort of like physical affliction, because I know that a lot of people claim to have had some issues.
Oh, yeah. Don't we all have some exes?
Yeah, physical affliction. No, as a matter of fact, I have seen nothing. Oh, yeah. And as far as the dogs and cats, one of my cats is right now 17 years old this month.
Wow. Oh, okay.
He's skinny.
Bless his heart.
One of my dogs lived to be 15. My four dogs, three have passed. One was 15 years and 3 months, and she was a 65-pound mix, husky mix.
Whoa.
My 100-pound Ridgeback died at 13, just 3 days shy of his 13th birthday. And my other Ridgeback who died on Thanksgiving, she died she was here for 10 and a half years. And we suspect she was about 5 or 6 when I adopted her. So she lived to be 15 and a half to 16 and a half years old for a 75-pound Ridgeback, which is unheard of.
I will say too, when I was living in Georgia, I was working in an animal hospital as a vet tech. When you're naming these these dogs, the breeds that they are, you're giving longer, if not around the amount that they are supposed to live. It's not cut in half. These are very well taken care of, and they have longevity. It seems just to give credence to that.
And the fact is, I also make my own homemade pet food, so they don't see the vets that often. Ooh. Where everybody feeds canned stuff and other stuff. You're going to see your vet. Look, I only know through experience of my dogs and my cats that made me realize. The cats, they eat boiled chicken breasts and chicken meat. And the dogs, like I said, I have a homemade pet lift that I make for that. But for him, sorry. I love you, Fee. I can't help it.
That's awesome that you do that. So and when...
These settings, the lifespans have been anything but nasty. They've all lived 13 to 14 years old, in some cases 15 to 17.
And do they show you? Are they ones to bark or look at a corner to let you know that there's something in the room?
I'd say yes and no. Reggie did it on a couple of occasions when I first got him. He had some really, behaviorally speaking, you'd say, what the is going on? What is he reacting? Now, that's something that he is physically seeing and dealing with because it can't be imaginary. You can see the reaction of the hair going up down his back, sticking straight up in his ears and the furrowed brow and the growling. Yeah, that was when he did that one time. I was like, what the hell are you reacting to? What do you see, boy? What are you seeing? Since then, I think that the spirits and the dog and the cats have gotten accustomed to each other. So there's that mutual respect to not trip the dogs out, except I do notice from time to time, the cats are chasing things up and down the spiral staircase to the second floor going, what are you chasing around? You can see that with your eye, but they're like chasing after something. And there's a video from 2002, from 20 years ago of Tess, my cat, coming out of this room, going into the hallway and tracking a bunch of manifestations and little objects zooming by. And he said, oh, it's dust. So then how come the cat is following the dust particles as they're moving bus because it can't be dust.
And I can't stand when people say that.
In some cases, they're right. But like I said, when you watch an animal reacting, attacking something that you can see on infrared, and then you see an object go haul ass down the hallway 30 feet, stop, go back, go down the hallway and go back and forth in front of the door and then through the door.
Right.
That ain't a speck of dust.
Dust is not going to fly around the house like that.
It doesn't look like it has a mission.
Like I said,
well, it's following a pattern or a path.
This, like I said, if you look at the test can deal, KISS was a test, has to deal with some ghosts. It's on my YouTube channel. This object, we're in the middle of the 30, 40 second video clip. This object goes down the hallway, stops, goes back and forth, and then through the door. And it's, that's just not possible for a speck of dust. Even if it's the camera lens, how is it doing that kind of movement, stopping and then going like this and then through? It's giving you clear viewing that it's something is there.
And what's something, David, can you tell us something about the house that not many people know about or something that might have happened there that you haven't been public about before?
We just had something happen for the very first time on Saturday night, which is I had these social media influencers here at the house and they were going in and out of the house. So they came in and one time they went outside and I realized that the door wasn't shut closed because I didn't want my dog. So I shut the door. 5, maybe 10 minutes later, we're all sitting there talking, having a bite to eat, and the door opens on its own in front of all of us. And it's on the video. We have it on the camera. And then last night, speaking of your knocks and hearing the sounds, there's a video from a few years ago where I was going down the hallway and I heard the sound of knock, knock, and it stopped me. This night, speaking of the devil, I think it was, what time was it? But it looks like 10. I think it was about 11 o'clock last night. I'm walking down the hallway from my bedroom into my office and I hear a knock again. And I'm like, I got to post that video up. And I'm a little bit disconcerted because I said, I don't like my jeans were undone. I just came out of the bathroom. I still got my, but I'm like, done at the time. I said, Jesus Christ, that is a terrible image to look at. They saw me in my underwear in the video from a few years ago walking down the hallway. So what the. But it's amazing because I heard that last night. And I'm not avidly ghost hunting, which is what it just says. I'm not always looking for ghosts, and nor are the ghosts willing to appear. When you look for them, they're more inclined to appear when you're not looking for them.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Which is a great thing that you have the DVR then, because then you can just see what it's like in the life of someone that lives in a haunted house. You don't have to hunt. If they're going to come out, they're going to come out. And it's great. I love how you have that DVR system.
That helps.
The best thing ever. Now, the hallway.
Yes.
Where you have your pictures.
Yes, the door's hallway, right.
What do you think about that hallway? Because I remember when you have people and you ask them, do you nice feel hallway? Like this?
Well, you're talking about the hallway on the egress going to the hot water heater room on the one end.
Yeah, where the washer and dryer kind of area. Like
that hallway you're talking about. Yeah, that I don't know how to explain because it doesn't add up. Meaning, it suits that hallway set is literally 8 inches raised up from where the laundry room is. And it runs the back portion of the width of the house. And it's literally built on a 3 foot wide by 3 foot tall concrete gray beam. And it's just a platform that's built out of 2x4s that's raised so that it basically sits on that level so that it goes to the outside door on the side staircase. Now, what's strange is when I first moved in here, almost every single person that would walk on that platform would comment, it's not level. I feel like I'm rocking back and forth in a boat. And over the years, that's dissipated. It hasn't been as pro, except I'm starting to notice now that when friends come to visit and see the house and they go there, they're now saying, oh my God, I'm feeling it. So he goes, I'm feeling fuzzy. I said, you're feeling fuzzy. He goes, no, I'm feeling like I'm disoriented, like I'm rocking back. And I said, you're rocking back and forth in a boat, like you're
in a boat.
And they said, yeah, my equilibrium feels like I'm rocking back and forth in a boat.
Whoa. Do you believe in portals, David?
Yeah, just not portals to hell.
Of course, because that's what I was thinking of that hallway is it just seemed maybe like that was a throughway. And that's why it gives people like a vertigo equilibrium off sense. Of course, no one can prove anything with portals, but It just, to me, why isn't that like that in every other room of your house? It's just really in that area. So does that, what does that mean?
Also in the earthen wall room, people had the same exact feeling of walking back and forth in a parent going. And that's the uniqueness about the house. Each room has its own unique, different, distinguishable interface
and
I would say energy, meaning that you'll, and here's the other thing, it's not constant, meaning you might go there at 8 o'clock in the evening and then you come back and it's nothing. Then you go back at 1, 2 in the morning and say, oh, wow, it's heavier on this side than it is on this side, and heavy by pressure on your chest, like something is in height, or pressure in your sinuses, like you've gone up so altitudes on an airplane. That's the kind of feeling that other people have experienced in other parts of the house, similar experiences they've felt, similar interactions. And I was going to say, some of the people that didn't feel it on Saturday night that we were going through the house in that mudway described when they were going down the stairwell, they felt fuzziness, like all of a sudden, like pressure, and like they were feeling a little bit. And I said, so you feel it? He goes, oh yeah, coming down the stairs, I felt it halfway down the first floor to the second, and then from the second to the third. I felt that same kind of, oh my gosh, it's really prominent.
Courtney and I talked about that spiral staircase. We, just because it's in your head almost, because I feel like my hallway in my house seems to be like a throughway, but it also seems to me that stairways, whether straight up or spiral, to me in my head, I always think of it could be a stairway to something else as well, or another throughway or something that, don't you agree, Courtney?
Yeah, I think we talked about it too. We dug into the idea that spirals in general supposedly create that kind of energy. Obviously, there's no way to prove that, but I think we Googled it whilst recording the episode just to see.
Yeah, we were talking about ancient civilizations, which you said that you enjoy that subject. We had looked up the spiral because the spiral is one of the things that is always drawn on a lot of pyroglyphics. And when I looked it up, it's like a rebirth symbol. So then if I always relate then ancient civilizations, whether it's ancient aliens or the Mayans or Native Indians, they had used that because it resembled some type of either rebirth or cosmos. Because as we know, ancient aliens, like with the Aztec lines, look how huge those are. And you really couldn't draw it from just standing on the earth. That had to come from high up. Someone had to. Yeah. But had to be something. Why are they drawing rockets in all of this when we weren't even in that rocket area yet? So we think, because the technology could have been very different back then. Now, being that it's Ghost Adventures, so I have to ask you, David, is there a negative entity that's in that bedroom?
No, he left when he left shooting here 10 years ago.
See, I knew it.
The negative entity was the son of the you-know-what from the show that vomited out of here after 3 hours in the 6-hour lockdown, scared to freaking death.
What was he scared of? What did he say? What did he say he was scared of?
Well, he didn't say he was scared of. I can tell you that halfway through the 3 hours that they were here, he marched up, came out of the house. I was outside standing there, took 2 steps off the front porch, got to the concrete landing, took 1 step and fell to the ground in a puddle of goo. He was like, oh man, I don't know. It's like mumbling. It's like, I ran up to him. It's like, Zach, you okay? And there are no cameras around, which is strange, but they didn't catch anything. And he's, oh man, he goes, my head's splitting. Oh my God. And then he goes, and his eyes are doing like this. Like bugging out because I can't focus. My head's just, and then the executive producer came in and said, Zach, you okay? And he goes, yeah, just give me a glass of water. He was just, and he got crapped on by the spirits.
Yeah. Has anyone else had a reaction like that in your house? No.
Yeah.
The closest would have been when Larry King Live, they did the episode here with Shirley MacLaine and James Von Prague. And Von Prague goes into the earthen room under the house. And Von Prague looks up at the mound of earth. And I'll never forget this. He looks and goes, there's Native American energy in this Matt Burke. I got to get out of here. And he went, just walked right out of that room. And I'm like, that was pretty fast. What's that all about? And I'm thinking, gee, of all the psychics and quote unquote, what do you call them, sensitive gifted people that have been here, including Marianne Winkowski, the real life ghost whisperer, and what's her face? God, what is her name? Jackie Barrett from America's Psychic Challenge. And all these other different psychics that have been here that are famous and not so famous. None of them, not one single one of them do I recall going in that room, picking up that Native American energy and just saying, I got to get out of here. That.
Wow. So are they all saying the same thing, David? Like all these mediums and people that have gone there to analyze your house, what's the main thing they all say is going on there?
All right. Marianne Winkowski famously said to me, I could clear this house, your house out in a second. The only problem is, David, that within 5 minutes, there'd be a whole new slew of spirits that would be at your house. I said, what do you mean, Mary? And she goes, your house has got like a revolving front door. I said, where are you? She goes, at your front door, you have a revolving door. And the spirits come in and they go out and they come in and they go out. She goes, there's nothing you can do about it because that's what it is. She goes, I can't.
I'd love that.
Because what am I going to do? She's like, I do, but it won't last. And Lisa Williams said, oh, you have a giant ghost flop house. She goes, she's the first time she's here, apropos Ghost Hunters, which she saw in the air. She wanted to see the house and contacted me. I'm like, yeah, you can come see it, but you can't bring your cameras and cruising. She goes, I just want to see it for myself. I'm like, wow.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
That's impressive. So I realized there's the difference between the actual people that are truly, really, sincerely interested in the paranormal and then the ones I like to say are paraposers or paracelebs. They do it for a dollar, and that's it. When the clock's at and the dollar's no longer there, their interest goes out with the money gone, not being there, they're done. Mm-hmm. And I'm Josh Gates? He's got that big show on Discovery Networks. Is it Josh Gates?
Josh Gates has the Expedition X and...
Yeah, several times, Dr. Off camera, at one of the conventions, twice invited him up here. He lives in L.A. This is going back 6 years ago now when I first... crossed paths with him. Nothing. Chip Coffee, another one.
Teresa, the Long Island median.
I'd love to have her come over. The fact that she's Long Island, I love it. I'd love to get a trip to New York. Psychic, why would that be funny? Going, oh yeah. Come on, bring it on, Teresa. Sit this house up and let's see what you're coming up.
Now, when you, I go to that one story, I just want to make sure that this is a big question I wanted to ask. You said you saw Jay Sebring.
Yeah. Mm. 20 years.
Tell me what that felt like, David, knowing what you know.
Hindsight is 2020, meaning at the time when I saw Jay Sebring, which was July of 2004, my girlfriend was an American Airlines flight attendant. She was flying the European route for that couple of weeks. My mom was dying of pancreatic cancer, and I appreciate it, but that's okay. We all go through it, or else our parents go through the other way around. My point being is it's 20 years past, and I woke up and I see this guy standing there at the foot of my bed, fully dressed. I know he's not real. I know he's not something because the room is dark, yet he's illuminated from inside. It's like almost like there's a kind of an iridescent glow. Not like the whole room was lit up like a candle. It was like just where he was in his face was illuminated, and it wasn't like the light was coming down. It was like the light was shining from above. He was the source of light, and he was powder blue gray in the flesh tone. His hair was charcoal black gray, parted on the side. It was kinky, unlike my hair, which is smooth and straight. His was more kinked over. So we're looking at this guy. He's wearing a short lapelled suit, buttons down. He looks fine otherwise, and I don't recognize him. So I figured he's an emissary ghost here to tell me that, A, my girlfriend just got killed or something happened to her when she was in Europe.
Oh, yeah.
My mom had died, and it was basically telling me that my mom had died. So he's just standing there, and he's got his left arm extended and his left arm out, stretched, and he's pointing with his finger, and he keeps keeps making a turn towards the drive, towards which is towards the house next, the property next door, and towards the bottom the driveway. Fine, there's no house next door. This is 20 years ago. So right. I keep watching, make a quarter turn towards that. And the next thing I know is he vanished. And as he's doing this, I said, what's the matter? I'm saying, what's going on? And then he just vanished. So wow. I got up, walked around the house, went upstairs, got myself a drink, sat there and said, what the hell is that about? I think I wrote down some specific notes about the incident and I went to bed. Got up in the morning, called my parents' house to see how my mom was. She was fine. Not a problem. My girlfriend called me 2 days later. She was fine. Not a problem. So none of it added up. About 3 months later, I'm doing research on this book long before I actually wrote it to see if there was anything that was destroyed on the side of the hill related to the Tate murders. So I went down to the LAPD, went once, and they had to bring me in, and they got the wrong box. They brought in the box of Tate LaBianca, and it was all the pictures of the LaBianca murders, which is cool.
Okay.
And I really don't understand, just as a side note, is why they don't take these photographs of the crime every single goddamn time these people are on parole. Because if you would have seen the method and of the execution and the deliberateness of the way that the bodies, you'd have 100% no one on that freaking parole board giving two scraps to parole anybody, light of the fact that these people were the recuperators. I'm sorry, you were on death row, baby. You don't get to come from the dead just because they reprise the death penalty means you should know death on life without parole. That's it.
Yes.
In any event, so I went down a second time and I'm going through and I'm looking through the photographs and I come across a picture. And I look and I said, that's him. And the cop in this office with me said, that's him. I said, nobody, what's... So I flipped the picture over and I'm back. It says Jay Sebring with his natural hairstyle.
Wow.
He had hair relaxing in his head to make his hair straight, which is a big to-do in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Straight hair. So when he died, you don't get to take it with you, so your hair looks the way it was in real life. So that's who it was that I saw in my bedroom, pointing. And as it turns out, he wasn't pointing, as I kept telling you at the time, he's pointing towards the driveway.
Mm-hmm.
And later, the sound of construction crew starts developing the piece of land next to me, which is a 90-foot long lot on the street frontage, and they dig down 60 feet from the, here's the driveway. They go 60 feet down and take out this whole section of earth, this hillside, and put up a concrete retaining wall and build a flat concrete pad and build up the side of the hill, two stories, concrete, the house. And then the top floor is just wood and concrete.
Wow.
That's what he was pointing to 10 years before they started to construct that property.
Do we know why he was pointing to that?
To forewarn me of the construction of that house next door. What it was, but something about that place. And here's what's ironic. During the construction of that house, when it was almost pretty much close to done, I had a party here during that summer that night. And somebody was on my balcony and said, oh, David, he goes, I just saw the security guard walking through the house next door. I said, security guard. I said, what exactly did you see? And where the balcony is, you can look right into the whole entire length of the property, the top floor. Because I saw, it looks like a flashlight at about 4 foot in height, this ball of light being like moving around the room. And I goes, come with me. Now we got a big party going on there. And I said, take a look inside the house. I said, it's pitch black. I said, secondly, do you see a security car, a security guard's car here, like Bellar Patrol or any of the patrol? He goes, no. He said, look in the gosh darn driveway where there would have been a car park because there's nowhere else. He goes, I don't see a thing. And we were literally outside within 2 minutes of him seeing this object walking through the.
Oh, my God. Have you seen anyone outside, David, outside of your home?
I've had friends that have gone outside and have... during investigations a few years ago, my friend said he saw somebody next door because there was no one next door. And he goes, no, I saw this guy walk by us. And I turned and looked and he was gone. It's like a shadow. I was like, yeah, and lots of people have seen that outside and on the street. Mm-hmm. My dog, like I said, Reggie had that trippy experience where first 2 weeks he was here, we went outside and it was about 11 o'clock at night. He walks down the driveway with me and he just stops. And all of a sudden I see him like get wide-eyed. His ears get like up and the back of his hair, back of his back hair got straight turned up. And I'm like, what's the matter? He started growling and then, rrr, rrr. I said, what's the matter? What's the matter? And then he just turned and started ran right into the house and was like, good for it. He looked at the gosh darn slide window near the dining room, and then he's back to the front door. This way, he starts growling, and then he started whimpering. And I'm like, what's the matter, boy? What's the matter? Could never to this day figure out what he was reacting to, but he was petrified.
Oh, my God. Hey, animals, I think, are good for at least, they see more and feel more than I think a human can, because we have our own thoughts and opinions that we have created over the years of our life, whereas dogs and cats really don't have that quite as much as we do, of course. So they're not as corrupted, I should say.
But David, I
wanted to talk a little bit about your movie, The House at the End of the Drive. So tell us the juicy details.
It looks like sometime this week, very shortly, I'm going to upload the film finally online, and it'll be on Vimeo. And as a matter of fact, this is it. This is the movie as it stands.
There's the baby right there.
This is the sneak.
That's a good one, Court.
For those of you guys who are watching on YouTube, he has a flash drive. Or not watching on YouTube, I should say.
Listening, yes.
Oh.
Flash drive that's going to be uploaded onto BMO, and we'll be selling tickets for $3.99 a ticket. We'll have a link on my website, houseattheendofthedrive.com.
Would you be okay if we shared that link when we publish this episode? Okay, perfect.
Yeah, please. By the time you guys publish it, the thing should be up online. And like I said, it looks like Friday night I'm going to do an event with these social media influencers that were here on Friday night. Starting right before the gosh darn Oscars, right? Because that's what I want to do it against. The Oscars. I don't care. It is what it is. It's a fun movie. And it's an original story, I think. All right, what's going on here, guys? Who's fixing with it? God damn it. Guys, they just cut out my gosh darn support lights.
I thought I saw something go out. He looked like he was in a darker setting.
Yeah, I was, because they turned the light. Don't do that.
Yep.
Stop fucking with it, okay? Just leave it alone. Don't. And you keep on flashing me, you son of a bitch.
I love
And they get pissed off when I yell at the dog. Like, the dog's doing everything right.
He has the best banter with his resident ghost. So what is something that you would tell someone that just got into their own haunted house? Give them some advice, David.
To quote Aretha Franklin, R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Coward to a spirit. Because as soon as you give up that, your own sense of self and identity and justification for being in that location, you're dead, because you've given it away. You can't be the chicken shit. You got to say, spirits, let's just try to figure this all out. You're here and I'm here. We all have to share this space. Let's try to do it in the most amicable, the most easygoing way possible. And stand by it. Don't bullshit it. Yes, you're going to have to bullshit, because you're going to find yourself not believing what you're saying for the most part. But when you buy into it and you say, look, treat it like it's a person that you can't see all the time. Mm-hmm. And just show them the respect that you want to have return respect for you, Sean.
Exactly.
Right. That's
exactly
about it, because you can't. And then so he said, what about, can you control spirits? And so, no.
Why would you want to? That's, you know.
It can get your mind. This is the other thing I found out the hard way. You don't have to say squat that the spirits can't already pick up what you're thinking. That's what people don't really understand. And I found this out the hard way, because the video that we shot, I think it's 2 years ago now, at 1:45 in the morning when I'm walking down the hall. And I throw my hand up, and then next you hear, knock, knock. And I stop there and I look in the camera. I'm going, oh my God, is there? And I'm thinking, is there a burglar in the house? And I'm thinking, wait a second, what idiot burglar would want to give away his presence in a house and lose upper hand of being on top of me when I don't know he's there? And then I thought, oh crap, it's not a burglar, it's a ghost. And then I realized, wait a second, I didn't say two words. I thought, spirits, I've got you covered. And then I throw my hand up as a gesture, and then it's acknowledgement to you hear the knock. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I started to realize it's 1, 2, or 3. They heard what I thought. And when I threw my hand up, their acknowledgement was, yeah, we got you covered. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, a good one. And that's what I get pissed off saying, there were no safe harbors then. If I don't have to say a freaking word and you can read what I'm thinking, it's all bets are off. And that's what I try to say to people. You can bullshit yourself the only time you'll get away with it with a ghost is when you have conviction and you believe in your stance and you say, I'm not going to let you get away with this, even though I damn well know, what am I going to do? And I even said that to the spirits out there, and we'll get the world's greatest exorcists and the world's greatest clairvoyancy medium to get you out of here and send you away. And then I'm thinking to myself, they're as human as I am. They're as feeble as I am. What are they going to do that I can't do, that I'm going to ask them to do, and then leave the house? And who's left in the house to deal with it after it's all said and done? Me.
You.
Who's gonna deal with it when no one's there but me to deal with it? Me. Somebody else to do your laundry is great, except for the fact that you're going to have to be doing your laundry unless they're living with you as a live-in maid to protect you against that which you are afraid of.
That's
your own battles. You can't.
So what do you think about the paranormal investigation groups that you see on YouTube, David? Do you think that it's getting to a point of disrespect or exploitation? Because I hear different ways of people looking at it. Some they like the groups. There's some that are respectful and they like watching them. Some they think it's fake evidence and they don't respect the spirits. And so what are your feelings about it being out there more on YouTube? And what do you think of all these new groups coming out?
Let's be honest. I don't want to be looking like the old man that says, Aaron, you're a son of a bitch. You're out of my goddamn car. Get out of here. That's as stupid as it sounds. Then while people get up the ass of other people and say, look, if you have a problem with what they're doing and they're doing it, don't watch. The ghost don't really give a rat's ass. You're not standing up. The honest to God's truth, and people don't want to hear this. They're over standing up for the spirits. You're full of shit. You're standing up for yourselves to get some attention. Let's be honest. You're a human freaking being. If you're not doing it for the ghost, you're doing it for yourselves because you want to be the other. You want to be the counterculture against these people. That's what's cut bones to the. What's cut right to the bone. You're trying to posture yourself against their position. When what they're doing is what they're doing, and they're going to do it regardless of what you say.
Right.
You're going to stop them. So you're calling them out to get your attention so you can have your 5 minutes of fame.
Of fame, yep.
Said. To be honest, look, we have it on television. It's not like the apple falls far from the tree. We've been having it for 16, 17 years with ghost adventures or ghost adventures. So what are you going to say? They're just following the lead of his asinine behavior.
I like the people that you had at your house, Barrier Beyond. They're my favorite. Victor and Jasmine, of course, Colin, Paranormal Files. I do like him. Just speaking of
YouTube groups. He's been here in years. That's the thing. Colin's been here, but that was years ago with his first girlfriend. And I invited Colin back and I'd love to see him. I've had Omar Gosh here. I've had...
Oh, I love Omar too.
Light Collective. I love Drum Light Collective. I love Michael and Jessica. I think they're great. We've had days with Jordan the Lion. I've had Scott Michaels of Dear Leader Part Tours come out. He has to come back and do another episode here. It's everybody's fighting for the same content, for the same locations and stuff, and wanting to do their version of it.
Yep.
You're not, what's to say that one is better than the other? Whoever wants to do it, they're going to do it. And when it comes to coming here with how I like them to be, it's they know the score. I said, you got to be respectful. You can't talk. And it's not because of your actions, but because I'm in control of what I'm in control. So I can say, this is good. This won't, this can't be done here. And I like to just maintain a certain amount of credibility, respect, and integrity when it comes to these people coming here. How they're going to edit it and say what they're going to say and do what they're going to do. That's, unfortunately, that's the way of the world. People are going to do what they're going to do no matter what you say.
Right.
Thing. I mean, you know,
I've watched one investigation from your place that I thought was overdone or like overproduced, or they made more of it than it was. Your place is phenomenal, even with a couple, because it's the feeling that you have there. It's everyone loves that feeling of they can tell someone's there. They can tell the great relationship you have with them. And a lot of people say that they love your place. They love going investigating there.
There's some things they're not relating, which is the fact that they know when they come in, there's going to be a full set of food. And I'm not going to make them go like, all right, what are we hungry? No, you get a high-speed internet vibe of the house. They love the fact that it's, they know that there's something here. They know that there's an ability that I don't push an agenda that's fraught with lies, deceit, and drama. I keep it straight to the bone and keep people on the level of understand that, look, this is real. I've been here 22 years. I don't play the game of, oh my God, there's a ghost that's going to hurt you. They're going to follow you home. I don't believe in that because I've yet to see that be the case.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, a lot of the myths about the paranormal, like this is a haunted object. This is my dad's favorite bottle of glue. Therefore, it's still attached to it.
Right.
So, no, he's stuck to it, Judy. It's stuck. I can't get it off. It's still stuck. Or
glue.
But the idea is it's an object that is anamorphic. It has the resemblance of a human being, has to be, somehow becomes possessed. And I go, but it's made out of plastic or it's made out of porcelain. And I say then, if that's made out of plastic and porcelain, then anything that's made out of plastic and porcelain could also conceivably be haunted. So, say a toothbrush. I'm not going to say it out of good respect for the ladies. Thank you. a female toy of pleasurable device. A phallus, as they used to say.
I knew that's where you were going with that.
Possibly be Mae West's most favorite phallus, and it's possessed too.
It goes off in the drawer by itself, and you can hear it vibrating from the other room.
That's non-type thing. That's going to just look big.
Someone's using it.
What does it start floating around the room in the middle of the night? It's shaking.
Oh my God.
A place to land.
It's just. Have you seen anything, David, levitate in front of your eyes?
All right. To answer your question, I have seen something that blew across the room in front of my very eyes.
And what was that? Tell me that situation.
It was, I think it was 5 years ago on the 40th anniversary. No, the 50th anniversary. I think it was the 50th anniversary of the Sharon Tate murders.
Wow.
We had an event here and there was, we had left and it was just about 12:20. What time was it, Sharon? 12:20. Okay. 12:20, myself and the artist, Joey Moss, who had painted three portraits of Sharon, which are life-size, larger than life portraits of Sharon that are in the house. We're here talking and we were at the, in between the living room and the den. Joey was standing at the threshold going in from the living room into the den. And I was 3 feet to his left. He's here and I'm here. And in front of him, 10 feet away here, is the aquarium. And on top of the aquarium are the Beetlejuice figurines.
Mm-hmm.
At 12:20, the large Beetlejuice figurine launches off the aquarium and flies 7 feet and hits the ground in front of Joey and his head rolls off. And I was, right as it's in midair, I turned my left as it's flying. I'm like, well, it's like, and I said, Joey, he goes, that thing just flew right at me. And I said, what time is it? And I looked at it, it says 12:20. I said, oh my God, 12:20, August 9th, 20 a.m., August 9th. And I said, what the fuck? And I heard the voice say, it's Sharon. This is the time that I actually died.
Wow.
20 minutes.
I was going to ask you
with
that.
Her body and her spirit separate. I'm like, when? Oh, and mama. I said, I just heard them say, this is the time that Sharon actually died. The moment when she dies at 12:20 a.m. And he was like, I can't believe this. I just can't believe that happened. We didn't have cameras at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, holy shit, son of a... So yeah.
Would you say that's probably the craziest thing that's happened in the house since you've moved?
Oh no, we've had crazier. I've had the faucets turn on in front of me. I've had it turn on in front of other people. I've had one person dragged up to the corner of the ceiling.
Whoa.
I've seen force in bedrooms. I've had on video people that my friend went down into the earth and water room and he came running out and says, I got scratched. He looked at his back and right in between his shoulder blades and the lower part of his back was a little like mark. It's like somebody like basically rubbed it really hard. And I said, and the spirit said he got what he asked for. And I'm like, the spirit just told me you got what you asked for. He goes, what do you mean? He goes, you asked if you were like taunting them and you said, I want physical proof. And his eyes were like, how did you know that I thought that right before I walked in? He said, but you did, in fact, do that with a slight little type of a comment. He goes, oh, yeah, that's, I said, you're physical and there's the proof. You watch the video.
You get what you asked for.
You watch the video and on the video, you see his collar of his shirt lift up like this. And then him like right out just like this. And of course, it's in the middle of his back where you can't reach.
Yeah, it's not like he.
It was, I said, and, but again. Respect. No respect. Disavow them. Same thing with Mystery, who had that problem here.
Mm-hmm.
They asked me before they did the third night when they did the reenactments. They said, oh, we're going to do this Trey Fordham story that she, I said, Trey Fordham, huh? She called me like 6 months ago and then she dropped off the freaking map. And I said, oh, she said she drove up your driveway with her mom. I said, must have been unannounced because she never called me to say we're coming up to say hello. So he goes, yeah, she said she drove up the driveway and part of the way up, she saw this image of Sharon Tate covered in blood in a white nightgown clutching her pregnancy. And I said, bullshit.
I was going to say, is that blown out of proportion?
I said, that didn't happen. I said, first of all, why would Sharon return in such a disgusting, disparaging fashion? I said, first of all, that's how she died. I said, that I don't buy. And second of all, why would she appear to Dre Fordham, who has no connection to this and that, to the house? I said, I don't buy that story at all. We're going to do it anyways. And I said, do it at your own peril, but it's disingenuous, it's salacious, and it's full. So when they're doing that shot, then the sequence they're shooting, I'm on the side of the house taking pictures with my camera. And in one picture, there's this ball of light pouring right out of the girl's stomach. And I'm like, oh, the picture, what the hell is? And I looked before and I looked after, and there's no explanation for what that is because the lights are in front of her and she's wearing a white, what was it, a nylon, type, an acrylic type, what do you call it, a white nighty. That was acrylic, and it's covered in blood. So I said, what's that light reflecting off of on her tummy if there's nothing on her tummy? There's nothing there on her belly. It's all, and I said, So when they did the investigation, all shit hit the fan, and they got waylaid and put off an hour to start the investigation because all of their equipment failed. And I'm like,
Because he misrepresented.
And they had to stop and put all the batteries and all the backup batteries back of the chargers and start an hour later instead of me started at 10. So I go to the top of the stairs and I'm screaming the goddamn stairs, giving them a like you wouldn't believe. And in his book, I Am Haunted, he writes 3.5 pages in his book, a half a chapter about me and I'm possessed. And he says, David talks to the spirits with a stern, vocal voice. Like a parent scolding a child. And I knew what he was referring to was when I went to the top of the stairs and started chewing the spirits out and saying, I don't want you to F them up. I know you want to kill them and throttle them. And I know you want to do them great harm, but I'm pleading with you. I'm begging you, please don't you F them up. Do not F them up. Please do not. Please. I don't want any. I said, leave them alone, please. So then the producer says to me as I'm walking out the house, he goes, what the hell was that? I said, what was that? I said, that was me asking the spirits to leave your crew and your cast alone because I'm getting a sick feeling. You guys are in for a real bottom drop out problems that you've never had anywhere else. And I'm scared and terrified for your well-being. I said, and you think, I said, you think that was some kind of a freaking act? I said, there were no cameras, were there? That was no act. I was being dead serious. And he goes, would you do that again for the cameras, but the PG-13 version? And I said, yeah, fine, I understand. That's why I know you want that, but you can't have it the way it was. And I said, all right, fine. So I went with his experience. I said, I know you want to molest them and hurt them and crucify them. Please do not. Leave them alone. Do not hurt anybody. So when he went in and the whole stuff started to happen, stuff started happening. And quickly, and Zach was like the second person that got messed up. Then, you know, famously, they sent Nick back downstairs to
investigate. Yeah.
And what you guys don't see, which I saw because I was there, was that whole sequence of events that starts out that's maybe 30 seconds on the show. That was quite much around 5 minutes. And they're cracking up in the backseat of the van, laughing at the monitor, laughing at Nick, and Nick's having this meltdown. And I'm like, how much more of this crap am I going to put up with till I say that's a? And I said to him, I said, look, I said, after Nick finally said, he goes, come down here and get me quick. And I said, look, whether or not Nick is really experiencing it or it's in his head, makes no difference to Nick. To him, it's real. And to Nick, he's having a meltdown. And as a psychologist would say, he could hurt himself. Forget if it's tactical and it's really happening. That won't hurt him. He'll hurt himself because he'll flip his brains apart. And I said, I basically chewed him out and gave him the riot act. I said, I'm going to issue. If I count to 20 and you guys have it, I said, I will tear up the freaking contract and I'll go get in myself and damn your freaking show. I said, you're not going to treat somebody that way with such distance. Mm-hmm. And that's a friend. I said, you are absolutely abominable. I said, I will not allow that.
Yeah, so Nick, I know, I'm glad that Nick left because he should have left. He was being treated like shit a lot. Even with Aaron, it's always send Aaron down there, send Aaron somewhere. So yeah, yeah. That's the one thing I don't like. Courtney and I, we don't like the way he acts toward a lot of people. And you know what? Mm-hmm. He's very provocative and stern to the spirits. But
I was going to say, the fact that he said that to you, with how he will go into investigations and seek out that kind of attention from them. And not that it's done in a negative way from your perspective, but he's actively pushing the envelope. Not to make this all about how we dislike him, but...
Before we end, we have some questions, just general questions that we ask every guest. So I'm going to start with, let's see, David, if you were a flavor of ice cream, which one do you think you'd be and why?
Jesus, I've heard, what is your favorite flavor of ice cream? What would you be as ice cream? Considering I don't want to be eaten, for God's sake. Okay, Jamocha, even though it is one of my favorite ice cream flavors, I think that's... Yeah, all right, fine, I got it. Enough. Jesus Christ, you said it once, it was more than too much. Jamocha almond fudge. Yeah, it's been a long time since I had Jamocha almond fudge. As I recall, it's got the sweetness of fudge, which is absolutely insane. And just, I love that. I think that's part of my being, is being very much like that. Also, obviously, the nuts, because you got those almonds, those crunchy, delicious. They're flavorful and they're a little bit nutty, which I've been charged with that. And I decided, yeah, I can't escape it. I don't disagree. I have to embrace it, revel in it, which is true. I am very unique in that regard. And I think that's the flavor. Jamocha almond fudge is an interesting mix of wonderful flavors that are never really found anywhere else but in that concoction, just like myself.
I like it. I'm going to have to find that. Now, imagine you're a superhero. What's your superpower and what's the most mundane thing you'd use it for?
God, that is a good one. God, boy, that's a good question. Boy, I wish I was high. Not easier. I got news to you. There you got a little more creativity than force of the brain. Jesus Christ. Oh, yeah. Be able to talk to animals.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Ooh, that's a good one. I never even thought of that one before.
And the reason, by the way, the reason why I was a little late, I kid you not, was I was in my bedroom and I was hearing these funny sounds. And I thought there was somebody breaking in somewhere on the roof or something. So I go outside and there's literally got to be about 30 rows between going down the driveway. They're in the trees. They're on the telephone pole. They're in the telephone line. They're on my neighbor's roof. There are a few on my roof. There are a few on the street, down the street, on the other side of my house. And there's a few on top of the guy's house. I'm like, I said, hello, boys and girls. I said, nice that you're finally visiting me. And I threw out some corn chips earlier. So they were like, I think you are the bomb. I said, I love you guys. I'm not choked up with how you treat the red-tailed hawk, but I said, I love you guys. I think you guys are the bomb. I said, finally, you're going to fucking make friends with you guys after 22 years of living here. Because I think that I just get a kick out of animals. I don't care. And people go, even snakes. And they said, yes, poisonous snakes are not. They just because that's how they killed their food doesn't mean that they're a bad animal.
The way that they have to survive. Exactly. Courtney, do you have any questions on the list that you want to ask?
I did. Hold on. Sorry, I was perusing. We have a full list. We won't ask you all of them, obviously. What's the best piece of advice you've ever received from a stranger?
Okay, here's a good thing. In high school, there was a guy that was a year younger than me that used to bully me around. Nobody's business. It was always his personal stomping block every day that he saw me, whenever. It didn't matter, school, inner school, or high school. And I think it was about 2 years out of high school, maybe 3 years out of high school, I went to a bar cafe and I noticed he was there.
Oh my gosh.
He's in a wheelchair. And somebody said, oh yeah, that's him, said and such. He had a terrible accident when he was surfing and he got knocked out to the board and a freak accident happened where during the tumbling through the wave, the board skeg, which is the fin that goes underneath that keeps you basically, it's like your rudder on the back of your surfboard, came and slashed across the back of his neck.
Oh my god! With
his spinal cord.
Oh my god!
So paralyzed. From the waist down. So, and I ended up seeing this total stranger, and I said, "You see that guy?" I told him the story. I said, "I want to go up to him and say something." And he stopped me, and he said, "He goes, be the bigger man." He goes, "You don't have to say anything more than I." I said, "He goes, says somebody greater than you and I is taking care of all of that." and return the favor to karma. And I sat there and I thought to myself, you're right. Nothing else I'm going to say it's going to make a difference. And it's going to change what he did to me. And I can sit there safe and sound in the fact that I'll never, ever come across him ever in an alley or dark alley doing anything to me ever again. So you're right. And I took it to heart and I walked back to him. I said, Andy, I said, nice to see you. I said, how you doing? And that was it. Mm-hmm. And that's what I said. And I walked away thinking, you know something? A stranger actually gave me some advice that was well worth the value of it.
Yeah. That's an amazing story.
That's a great story.
That's something that anybody can take away that's had the torment of a bully in their past, that eventually things that, and believe you me, I'll be the first to admit, I'm not happy that I didn't.
No, of course.
Make a form of getting back. But the fact is, as the guy said to me, he goes, you won't have to worry because he's never going to be standing up ever again on his own 2 feet. And he goes, wow. And you just have to be happy in the sense that eventually everything worked out.
Everything evened out, even though it is sad, but
right.
I get what you're saying for sure.
Yeah. It was, like I said, it wasn't just, minor enough. Let's just say this guy was tormenting me for the 3 years plus of my life. And at a party, I'd see him and he'd just jump me and start beating the crap out of me. And the guy was 6'2", and I'm only 5'9". So it's not like we're talking like, and I never did find out what the causation was because I never knew and I never found out. And there was nothing that I had done to create said antagonistic antipathy towards me at all.
Mm-hmm.
I never said 2 words to the guy. Why would I? Is he younger than I was? So it wasn't like I would have any contact with him before this, going to high school there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Totally not. Oh, you knew him from years ago. I only met him when I was in 10th grade and he was a freshman. So it's a little bit hard to say that I had any contact with him prior to this, to going to school there. And I'd never had 2 words to him outside. He would just jump me and beat the shit out of me. So, like I said, and he died several years ago. And people was out on Facebook and I could give a rat's ass. No, he got what he deserved. He's a piece of shit, and I couldn't care less when he had his axe. And people are like, oh, that's too bad. Like, I couldn't give a shit for what I saw of him. He got more than his deserved.
And karma comes back around.
What he did,
it does.
What he got.
For sure. Completely off of the topic from that, what is the most spontaneous thing you've ever done? Aside from building a house right next door to...
That's not spontaneous. I'm trying to give you some bits. I've done a lot of crazy. I've done a lot of crazy things that people said, how did you? What did you? A good example was being spontaneous was me and my friend were at the Four Seasons Hotel on Doheny, just north of Burton Way in Beverly Hills, 1 o'clock in the morning. We're just leaving there. And I turned around and I see this guy dressed in all white, head to toe, and he's freaking tall as a goddamn mountain. He's tall as a skyscraper. And I'm looking, I'm thinking, oh my God, that's Dennis freaking Rodman. And he's literally there. He's got a rattan wicker basket in his hand and he's got these towels and he's going up from table to table. He's just moving off. He's going, can I give you a towel? So I said, Mark, I'm looking over my friend Mark Fleet. I said, Mark, Dennis Rodman. And he goes, I said, I'm going to go walk up to him and introduce myself. And my friend says, nuts. He goes, no, he's going to go through his terrible divorce with his wife and suddenly about child support and this and that. He's going to be appearing in court in the next couple of days. And I said, and this Brit said, what am I listening to him for? I marked the water. So I walked up to Dennis and I pulled out my postcard. I said, Mr. Bob, I said, I want to introduce myself. I'm David Olin. I said, I'm a film producer. I've got this movie called House at the End of the Triads. I said, here's my postcard and my information's on the back. I said, can we call sometime? And he looked at me. He's like, what are you doing? I said, you're coming over with me. You're going to sit at my table with my friend and my dates. And I said, hey, Mark, come here. I said, we've been invited to sit down at Dennis' table.
That turned out better than Mark was probably.
Oh, that
even expecting.
An hour and a half till 2:30 in the morning, talking our asses off with Dennis and his friend.
Dennis Rodman.
Oh, gosh. Dennis said he sent me wrong. He's saying, look, he's saying, oh, I got it. But he was so close. He said, look, Dennis, you want to come check out a haunted house? He said, give me a call. He goes, haunted house? He goes, you know the place, don't get that shit. He's like, look, it's cool. He goes, no. And I told him, he goes, yeah, whatever. Okay. But it was like just so chill. We were just sitting there talking to him. And it's just and Mark's like, I don't believe it. I said, Mark, sometimes you gotta see.
Oh, I like that. I like that. That's right. So to finish up, David, let everyone know everywhere that you can be found, like all your handles. Also, let them know or just give us a kind of guesstimate when the movie is coming out.
sometime this week, by the time this is released, and hopefully by the 7th, we'll actually be online and people can pay $3.99 to see the movie, House at the End of the Drive. It'll be, you can look it up at houseattheendofthedrive.com, all spelled out. Also, you can also find the copy of my book, Ghosts on Cielo Drive, at ghostsoncielodrive.com. I think there's only two copies right now, and then we're going to have to reorder. And the new issue of the book, which will take about 2 or 3 weeks, but then we will be fully stocked and have them available online. And like I said, the movie, come and check me out at youtube.com, David Oman, O-M-A-N, and check out my videos. We're going to be putting up a few more from this past weekend. Probably tonight, tomorrow, they should go up and your audience can watch them and see some of the strange crap that goes on at my house.
Yes, and what I'm going to do in the show notes for everyone is I'll put everything that David just covered right there about where he can be found, etc. And then I will also pick out a bunch of videos from David's place and link them. So if you've never watched anything, any of the investigations, like I mentioned with Barrier Beyond, Paranormal Finals, Oh My Gosh TV, etc., I'll have some up there so we can, so you can enjoy watching them, because there's some great evidence that's been caught from all of those. But David, I just want to thank you so much for gracing us with your presence. This has been, this is like a celebrity crush thing. So I'm just so happy that you can make it. And I would love to do a part two if you would be so generous to do that.
How'd you two like to come out here and do your part two live from the house?
Oh my God, we would love that.
Sarah's not got the costume ready.
She has fallen out.
This one dropped.
We got Farrago. We're Farrago.
Why not?
Oh my God.
We're still young and we're still alive.
I would, oh my God, it would be a dream. It would be an absolute bucket list dream.
Yeah, come on out, sure. To the show from here, do it live, and then do the show as well. Look at her.
She's, I'm like,
but you can wait it off anyways as a business expense.
I'm so excited. Yes, we can. I don't even care. I'm just.
You do.
Yeah, I don't think we care about any of that, but we will not see it for ourselves, I think.
Fiscally and irresponsible. Be responsible, fiscally speaking. You'd have to get a couple of other places lined up. Go to the Hollywood sign, go to the Laugh Factory, which has got its own stuff going on there. Go during the off hours when you can get in. And do, I'm telling you, you guys get a lot of material for your show. And go over to the, what's it called? The, whatchamacallit, where River Phoenix died.
The Viper Room.
Viper Room, which is, you know, check all these places. The Beverly Hills Hotel down the street's also got plenty of thicken odds.
The Biltmore, too, where the Black Dahlia, Elizabeth Short, had
and
visited.
Bro lived, right, exactly.
Yep.
Till 19, what was it, 36? Yeah, 36. So yeah, you get all these places knocked out while you're out here.
We will keep in touch, Courtney. We should look at our schedule, and then David will just converse back and forth to see what we can put all together. And I would love it if you would welcome us there. I'm there.
Just
I'm
did.
100.
Yeah. would welcome. I just did. You're...
My spirit is already there. It's just right here just to do this. That was me actually running back and forth in front of David. Geez. That was my spirit.
Get home. You'll visit it with your body, not just spirit.
And I hope all you listeners enjoyed the conversation. Until next time, stay true.
Stay you.
Stay sinister.
Thank you so much, baby.
Hold on to your seats, folks. Studio Sinister presents Port Lock, where even ghosts fear to tread. Prepare for a roller coaster of terror in the ghost town of Port Lock, Alaska, the place where hairy beasts roam, devilish critters run amok, and a wailing spirit takes evening strolls in the woods. Oh, and let's not forget the unsolved mysteries that'll have you scratching your head like a confused ghost. Step right up to witness the 1930s drama unfold with loggers meeting their match in logging equipment. Seriously, who needs enemies when you have machinery like that? And residents meeting their mysterious ends. It's a real estate market crash like no other. Join Studio Sinister for a spooky episode that'll have you chuckling nervously as you tiptoe through the haunted tales of Port Lock. Are you brave enough to face the ghostly and ghoulish details? Tune in if you dare, dropping March 20th.